Well, as we continue on our journey regarding our conversation on money, we want to be reminded why we're doing this. Well, one of the reasons why we do this is, and people have commented to me, and that is, there's not too many churches that I've been to that preach about money, except to get it, sex, and power. But that is a real problem, because money, sex, and power are the things that our lives are always engaged with. In our thoughts, in our hearts, in our interactions. And these are vital for us to grasp and wrestle with, so we might engage the world with sensitivity and understanding, knowing where we stand as believers, and compassion on those who are around us. So we've come to a place where in our conversation about money, we are tackling some of your questions regarding both investment and gambling. So here are some of the questions you're asking. What does the Bible say about investments and savings, considering God says, do not worry about tomorrow? Should we borrow to invest? How do I focus on the good that comes from investing and prevent my trust and security from being based on those things rather than on God? Where is the line between investment and gambling on stocks? What is the biblical teaching on investing? And how are we to view gambling? Poker, VLTs, lottery tickets, etc. And is gambling really entertainment? Well, in our quest to answer some of these questions, they are a lot. Diane and I are realizing that, boy, you know, even though we've devoted 3-4 months to each of the topics, these talks are enormous. And even just spending one, you know, sermon on this sort of subsection of the topic is quite overwhelming. But thankfully, there are people in our congregation as well who have thought about these things, and so we have a very special speaker today. Our speaker has been involved in the financial industry for a very long time, and has given a lot of deep thought in sort of engaging this investment theology, the understanding of how we handle finances with their own life. So I want you to welcome with me Unai, who is going to be sharing with us. And thank you so much, Unai, for doing this.
You're very welcome. You're like the only person up here that gets applauded, but thank you very much for your support. You know, I feel very blessed to be able to be here to share with all of you. This topic certainly has been a topic that I've thought about for a long time. Some of you here have been in small groups with me or been in fellowship with me and have heard me share a little bit about my family narrative in regards to money. And to sum it all, as a child, in essence, there was a lot of confusion, and I'm sure that many of us here can also relate to that narrative where there were many questions circling my mind, especially as I observed family, relatives, and their attitudes and their perspectives towards money, and the impact that had on them and their lives and their families. I grew up, or my childhood was in Singapore, and for some of you here who are familiar with Singapore, it's a very, I'd say it's very capitalistic, very business-oriented society, and within my family, I had relatives that talked very openly about their investments in stocks, in the markets, and I also observed as a child, you know, the ups and downs that would come as relatives made or lost money, and then also, as I said earlier, the impact that had, the joy, the frustration, there were also then those who are more of the participants, you know, who actually participate, you know, invested themselves, or those who stood on the side and commented. And that, I guess, also contributed to the confusion, because there were comments like, you know, stocks are gambling, you know, and that, I guess, relates to one of the questions. And so I realized I was not alone, as others here, I'm sure, have had similar questions along the way. And I feel blessed because through the course of my university education and then also throughout my years as a professional, I've had the opportunity to learn about business, capital markets, and also learn about personal finance and in particular how it relates to our responsibility as Christians to deal rightly with money and investing. And over the course, I feel like God's been very gracious. I've had many questions, and I feel like along the way, God and His Spirit working in and through me, the way He has His Spirit working in and through each one of us here, He has shown me some light along the way, especially on this topic. As a professional now, I invest on behalf of my clients, and so I do deal directly with investments and with stocks, with markets, and so that is, and business, and so that has become an area that I've grown in understanding. And similarly, dealing with individuals and their investments, but not only their investments, their lives and their experiences, their hopes, their dreams, their goals, and being able to hear many different stories along the way, be it of my clients, of people who just simply come to me as one they hope to seek some guidance from. I feel blessed being able to also learn in that regard. And along the way, being involved quite actively, as some of you know, through Servants Anonymous, the organization that helps women who have been sexually exploited, but really more than that, women who have been abused, who have been subject to addictions of various sorts, and who have troubled lives as a result of that, and being able to also speak with them and hear their stories about their struggles and their challenges and with money, and then to realize that, you know, we all are journeying together, and there are differences, but there are also many common threads, and so it has been very informative, and so I feel blessed to be able to share some of the things that God has taught me along the way, and I thank you, Ted and Diana, for giving me this opportunity. So the sermon today, or the sharing today, I feel a bit ill-equipped to call myself up here preaching or giving a sermon, but shall we say the sharing today. The scripture passage that Ted read to us, I think, is one that provides a lot of guidance on the topic of stewardship and stewardship as it pertains to investment. And so I think it really is very helpful for us to reread this and to really take a deeper look at some sections of it. And so if I may, I will actually take us back a little bit to verse 14, because that is the introduction part to the scripture. And as you know, this comes from Matthew 25, and in the parable before it, the parable of the 10 virgins. And all this, I from my understanding, and I did speak with Ted prior to coming to share this, so we've gone over the material together, and it's pertaining to us being prepared as Christ followers here on earth, knowing that His kingdom is both here on earth and also to come. And so we're not just citizens of this earth, but as Diana has shared, we are citizens of the kingdom of heaven. And how does preparedness then relate to our discussion today? Verse 14, so the parable of the talents. Let me just read a little bit again and then just to share a few of the insights I've gleaned. Verse 14, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1. Each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. And then we go on to where Ted read about the response of the master, our God, when he came back. just to go back then to verse 15, to one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. So we see here then that God gives us these talents that we have, and so it's an entrustment, right? You know, it's not for us to take possession and say this is ours, we derive this on our own accord, but it is God who has entrusted our talents to us. And as I mentioned, it's about stewardship, because then we are God's stewards. We're not here individually, you know, with our own bank accounts or portfolios and net worth on an individual basis. We're all here as God's stewards. Stewardship. Let me just get to the slide here then. Do I just click on it? Okay, here, stewardship. So what is stewardship? Number one, investing our God-given talents and resources in service to God and His kingdom. As it says here, and as I just shared, these are God-given. And that's so important to know, because first and foremost, when we understand, I guess, the hierarchy, you know, that God is above all, then everything's so foundational, you know, it stems from that, basically. And so knowing that the talents that we have are from God, and stewardship then is investing these talents and resources in service ultimately to God and also to His kingdom. Stewardship then results in a multiplier or a compounding effect. We've shared in the past, I know Diana's talked, I think maybe last sermon or one before, about expenditure versus investing, right? So with expenditure, you know, when you purchase something, you use it up. It's used, so to speak, right? There is a consumptive aspect to it. But with investing, what it is the difference is that you pour your talents, and I will share a little bit more what that encompasses, but you pour it into something that grows. So you preserve it, and even more than preserving it, you grow it. There's a growth, there's a compounding effect. And as God's stewards then, as His children who are faithful, what are the results? In our own character and understanding, as we exercise our gifts in partnership with God and His purposes, we grow ourselves, and we grow in our own understanding, and we grow in our relationship with God, and also we extend the reach of God's resources, and we are able to, you know, further the blessing of God to others. I think it's important at this point to, again, it's always to build up the foundation, to understand then what are the talents and resources that we're discussing here. Many, you know, can think of investing as it pertains only to money, but there's so much more. And the truth of the matter is that we all here have wonderful talents and resources that we can invest, that we can be stewards of to the kingdom of God. First of all, experience. You know, all of us here, we're not little children anymore. We're grown-ups. There's Evan, but even Evan's got life experience. And certainly Uncle Philip and Auntie Emily, that much more. But with all of us, the journey that we've gone through in the course of life, we've all learned. In this area, that's one area that God has shown me. And for everyone else here, you know, your work experiences, your experiences in relationships, your experience in handling things, circumstances, that all counts. And that's an asset. That's a resource. That's a talent that we can certainly invest, that we can certainly grow to the kingdom of God. Our abilities, certainly. And from the back to the parable of the talents, each according to his ability. The understanding then here is that each person's ability will be different, right? And it's not just different in terms of amount, but also different in terms of purpose. And that's the beauty of our community. That's the beauty of the family of God, is that we're all gifted with different skills, with different abilities. our passions also are our gifts and talents that we have. And here, you know, I think of passions as, you know, what brings us joy. And certainly as children of God, we all have the joy of the Lord. And it's something that we can pour in and certainly expand. But also more specifically, there are different giftings here, different passions here within this group as well. Some perhaps, you know, passion for students, and then for music and the arts. I know Elam's got a wonderful passion for organization and administration, and we're so blessed. Abraham last night blessed us with his passion for cooking, and the list could go on if we just were to touch upon each and every one here. There's beauty in passion because it's where the heart comes in. I mean, when we share in the joy that we have, it really is a good thing. And of course, money, naturally. You know, of course, with all of us here, some of us may have on a, you know, purely financial scale, more or less, but here in North America, in Western society, and certainly here in this group, we all have means of varying forms, but we all have means. And that is also another form of talent and resource that we have to be stewards of. And finally, time. Time is not something to be underappreciated because we all also have 24 hours in a day. Perhaps some need more sleep than others, but nonetheless, in waking hours, we all have time that can be shared. And so when we look then in terms of talents and resources, it's broad. You know, it's not narrow. It's not just limited to one confined area, but it's very broad. And also, just as importantly, we all have a little bit, a combination of all of the above. And so then when we think of this scripture, it really applies to all of us. Every day we all have opportunities to invest our talents and resources in people, and you know, again, we feel very blessed with Kim, Dave, and Evelyn, and you know, sharing about their ministries directly with people. But also, all of us here interact with people every day, and to be able to invest our talents and resources, right, the five I've mentioned, experience, abilities, passions, money, and time, we have opportunities every single day, every one of us here, to invest our talents and resources in people, in enterprises, so perhaps that's in an organization such as our church, or in the organizations that we're part of, be it our educational institutions, or in our areas of work. Organizations really are, or enterprises really are organized groups of people, but it's back to the people. But just as importantly also is physical resources. And, you know, to be able to take care of things, be it your garden, or to be able to bring beautiful art and to take care of buildings and, you know, the environment, that's also a form of investment because we are really preserving and making good out of these physical resources, which ultimately go on to bless people that use them or are part of them. So then when I think of, again, stewardship, investment, the point of all this is to understand that we all have a role to play, and all of us can be stewards and investors of our talents and of our resources. When I think of the topic of money and all the trappings that come with it, I think we can categorize a few key areas. Dealt in a way that is not based upon healthy stewardship. You know, there are many, many trappings of money that become the offshoot of really unhealthy or poor stewardship. And I will address this, but here they are. And I think Ted mentioned these are the seven deadly sins, or among them, right? And I listed some of them: pride, envy, greed, gluttony, worry, and guilt. But what it is then is that a healthy perspective of stewardship frees us from many potential trappings of money. What it is about getting to the foundation, right? You know, greed, pride, envy, gluttony, worry, we're all subject to temptations in these areas, myself included. And when you get to the core of it, you go, what is it? What is it that drives people, you know, to these harmful areas of sin? And when it comes down to it, if you really were to boil it right down, it's because those of us, and you know, as when we are subject or when we are, when we manifest these sins, it stems, and it's like at the very, very core, if you were to boil it right down, is that it's an unhealthy view of stewardship. And meanwhile, a healthy view of stewardship can really free us from all these trappings. So let me just share a little bit more in detail. First of all, you know, when we think of pride and envy, at the core of it, it's about comparison, right? You know, when you have more than others, it's easy to feel proud, you're better than them. And conversely, when you perceive yourself to have less than others, you feel envious. And they're really two sides of the same coin. And certainly, as I said, we've all been tempted, myself included. And what it is then is if we understand, right, going back to the passage, that God gave the talents differently. To the one to whom he gave the 5 and to the one to whom he gave the 2, they both went out with the same reaction. They worked quickly, they put the money to work, and he came back and his response was identical to the both. So meaning, the one with the 2 ended up with the 4, the one with the 5 ended up with the 10. Simple mathematical percentages, they both doubled, right? But, you know, if one were to use a very, you know, very abstract, very, very basic way of comparison, well, it's easy for the one with the 10 to feel, you know, prideful towards the one with the 4. And conversely, the one with the 4 to feel inferior to the one with the 10. But yet God's response, or the master, God's response, was identical. You know, he was pleased. He was just as pleased. And so then, you know, we all, going back to the different talents and resources, we're all blessed and we're all entrusted, I should say, differently. So then, you know, when we have a healthy view that, you know, we work with what we have and, you know, in faithfulness to God, then, you know, comparisons become irrelevant, right? Because, yes, someone might have more, but perhaps they were simply entrusted with more. And so, you know, it is what it is. And we do our part, right? And so I find that for myself, especially having struggled with these very sins and temptations, you know, learning and growing in this area has really freed me of that, you know, that, I guess that, the dual temptations of the pride and the envy, realizing that, yes, comparisons are arbitrary and rendered simply irrelevant. So that takes care of that, right? And what else? You know, the temptation towards the gluttony and towards sloth. And, you know, God said to the third servant, you know, you wicked and lazy servant. And the healthy view of stewardship then is to realize that we all have different talents. It's a given we have talents, but we don't take them for granted, and we use our talents. You know, sometimes there's a question that I have people ask me, well, how much is enough? You know, if I maybe had $1 million, do you think I can just stop working and just enjoy? You know, and I always pause with that question because I think, well, that's an arbitrary figure, isn't it? You know, certainly from the standpoint of providing for yourself, you know, there's a mathematical calculation that one can undertake to say, if this is all the expenditure I will require, I think I'm going to live this long, not like you really know for sure. But nonetheless, you know, when people do financial plans, right, it's basically somewhat based on a formula, you know, how much you perceive yourself to need in your time of not working and how long your life expectancy and then how much you'll need as a result of that. But may I expand upon that perspective? Because that perspective is then that it boils down to this, the view that your money is really just for yourself, right? And providing for yourself when, you know, if you're given the opportunity, right, to deploy your talents, not just money, but, you know, all the talents we've talked about, and it's not just about yourself, then, you know, we have a responsibility to use our talents and to not just see it as a finite figure of when we can just, you know, go have that dream life. And truth of the matter, having dealt with many retirees myself, you know, there is no such thing as this dream life anyway. You know, it's an advertising, you know, notion, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. So we have a responsibility is the main point. And then I guess these were our two points are interrelated. Talents then are not to be squandered through self-indulgence and sloth. And so having more doesn't just mean more and more for ourselves, or then we just can slack off and not do anything. But then it's that, like I said, it's about being responsible with what we have. And again, realizing that it's all about the kingdom of heaven that we're stewards towards. And the last point is also very important, because there was a question earlier about, investing, and how do we, there was something about investing and not worrying, right? You know, like, not worrying about God providing for tomorrow. And we'll go over the questions, but I wanted to address some of them along the way where it was a natural fit. But basically, it's a question about, you know, how do you balance between investment, stewardship, and, you know, trusting God and not worrying? And I think it's actually all interconnected, because the point here is that God simply does not demand more than what we're capable of producing within His plan. I mean, God has very clear guidelines for our work. For example, we observe the Sabbath, right? And so then, you know, as we are faithful as God's stewards and we, you know, deploy our talents, we work, we serve, we give, right? It's also within the context of that day of rest, so that we don't run ourselves over trying to just get more. And God is faithful in both keeping us accountable and also in providing for us. So we do our part, right? We are responsible. We are like the servants who went out with preparedness of heart to put the money to work, or put our talents to work, and then we trust. And so this is that, it's that balancing act. So we do trust that within the confines of God's plans, including rest, including you know, being able to take a step back and relax, and also to understand that God's plan is not just about work to generate income, but also, you know, investing our talents, our experiences, our ability, our passion, and spending time with people, and that's also all part of God's plan. So it's so multidimensional then, and it frees us then with this right view from worry, because we know that as we're faithful, well, God provides. But also, we have a responsibility to be faithful, and we don't just sit there, and God's not a magician, because the point is not to get things. The point is to be faithful to God, to be in partnership with Him, to grow in our relationship with Him, and as we deploy our talents, that's all part of the natural process. And so then worry, guilt, well, you know, that's also rendered irrelevant. Easier said than done, because of course these are daily struggles that we all go through, but nonetheless it's helpful to go through you know, these discussions and hold one another here accountable, and to care for one another within this context. This is where I'll take a little step away from the personal personal side, and just kind of take us to a higher level to understand then business, economy, and investing. And I think it's an important part, because you know, if we are talking about, say, investing our money specifically, well, you know, what do we invest it in? And it's helpful at this point to have just a general overview on, you know, the market economy that we in, you know, the Western world interact with every day. If I were to boil it right down, it's this, that the growth and development of modern business has been connected with freedom of thoughts and ideas, rights to property ownership, labor reform, the rule of law, and competition. It's a mouthful. But let me then take a step back and explain a little bit. Perhaps actually if I went, that's okay, I'll just leave it up. I'll just leave it up and share a little bit. Let me go back in time a little bit, maybe walk through multi-century, you know, history of the market society. As living here in Canada, we are part of, you know, the Western world, as one could, I guess, segment things. And so I will address the history of market development in the West. Going back in time, and I shared a little bit about this in one of the question and answer and comment periods in the past, but I'll go into a little bit more detail today. So going back many hundreds of years, perhaps back into the Middle Ages, medieval period, and even beyond that, before that, historically, in many countries of the world, feudalism and what you call manorialism. Let me explain these terms, but they were the prevalent forms of economy and society in many parts of the world, including the West. Feudalism is where you have a small segment of the population, the lords, the aristocracy, so to speak, owning land, right? And then they would have the masses, the peasants in particular, because most of the economy at that time was agriculturally based, and these peasants would work for their lords, and they wouldn't have any land ownership, and so everything that they had was basically a function of what was given back to them out of the behest of the lords and the barons of their day. And so then when you think of that period, it was quite a two-tiered system with an extreme gap between the have and the have-nots. When we think of the haves and have-nots today, it's actually a vast improvement in terms of the differences from back then, especially with many peasants and, members of rural society who are really, really, really poor. And if their lords were kind to them, they were taken care of. And in many cases, the power side of the equation or the discussion will address that. And unfortunately, because of the imbalance, the total imbalance of power and lack of accountability, many were taken advantage of. And then you also have what you call the lords, the serfs, and the servants, right? These are all connected terms. But essentially, that was the nature of things for many years. Later on, especially with the invention of the printing press, and we certainly as the Christian Church have benefited from that with the Reformation and basically the democratization of knowledge and information. So now, as Christians, we've individually got access to the Word of God and not just have it delivered, right, from a limited few, but also in general, the advent of this Enlightenment period, right? Democratization of education allowed, the lower classes, the peasant classes, to their children to slowly become educated. And Scotland was one of the countries, especially with the role of the church being involved in that, one of the countries that really was pioneering on that front in terms of educating the masses. And with education and empowerment, there were revolts over time where they just had it with their lords. And, there have been, as most of us here are familiar, periods of revolution, right, in the course of history. And the French, the Russian being among the few. And then some more peaceful, some a bit more violent. But nonetheless, this is just how things have transitioned over time. And so then these are the forces basically that led to the collapse of the feudal system, the manorial system, and the genesis of modern capitalism. Capitalism then is, if you understand the core of it, is that it's underpinned by the basic principle of freedom, right? Recognizing that freedom has self-governing mechanisms. And some of you may have heard terms like laissez-faire, French class, let it be, right? Some of you may have heard of Adam Smith and the theory of the invisible hand. And what that is with capital markets, and I'll share a little bit more in detail later, but to touch upon it, is that, allow for the proliferation of ideas, of opportunity, and the development of the market system, right? That brings together basically suppliers, right? Purveyors of goods with consumers. Allow that to function naturally. Remove hindrances where possible, and understand that there is basically a self-governing mechanism. So, for example, with with the market-based system, right, to where you have, you know, if you have more supplies, more people competing for the consumer, well, price, those of you who studied basic economics, it's supply-demand, you know, the intersect at the price point, right? And so then, you know, let price be decided upon itself, because then it's natural, right? If there are more people wanting something and there's a limited supply, then understandably, right, you bid the price up. So then those who are more willing to pay, they would be the ones who get it. And conversely, if, you know, there's abundant supply and there are fewer people desiring it, then you lower the price and then, you know, you're able to sell. Now, it doesn't work out perfectly, and it's not intended to. Again, on this side of heaven, one could never have a perfect system. But in all honesty, I think it's a system that on the whole has evolved for the good, and I think it's one where we as Christians can appreciate and then comfortably interact with it rather than have any form of a cynical or narrow view towards it then that leads to inaction or a critical spirit. So then going back again to the evolution or the development of the market system. This was also at a time where there were competing views, and I think there was one of the questions as well about, you know, the capitalist system and how that compares with the communist system. Well, it's a big loaded question, but Ted and I had a good discussion about that. And what it is that at the very core, the communist system and also other political theories such as, you know, absolute, you know, dictatorship, or the ideal of having a benevolent dictator, but in those structures, at the very core, it's I think an unrealistic view of human nature. With communism, where the understanding is that the state owns everything and everyone works faithfully and, you know, for equal output, regardless of whether one works harder or another, in an ideal, you know, if we're all humans here are perfect, you know, just perfect, no sin. Oh, naturally, right? We will all work really hard and, you know, we will all do our bit and, you know, support one another. But human nature is not that way, right? And I mean, much as we are apt to criticize, I certainly can be, you know, if I were in that situation, I probably wouldn't work hard either, you know? Or if I were in that situation of absolute power, well, the great temptation is easily to abuse it. And so then in its system, it's idealistic, but the capitalist system, the alternate system, if one were to just look at those two in comparison, is one that's a bit more realistic because there are checks and balances, right? You know, if you don't, you know, serve your customers well, you lose business, you know, and if you work harder and, you know, of course, it's not a direct correlation always, but there is a degree of correlation we all here can agree to that, you know, one that deploys, you know, more an industry towards their efforts, you know, there tends to be a more positive outcome. And, you know, to be able to be a stakeholder in that, you know, it aligns incentives, basically. And so that's to address that. But basically also to understand that with Western capitalism, it's combined with the rule of law. And, you know, when we think back, especially here in Canada, to, say, the American Constitution, it's the largest economy in the world and you know, a powerful country. And at the very core, it was actually based on the thinking of this political thinker in Great Britain, John Locke, you know, where, you know, basically it's that we all are created, people are created equal and independent and have the natural right to defend their life, liberty, life, health, liberty, possessions. And it's there that, you know, has come the Western rule of law, right, that include property rights and also human rights and protection. And so, you know, all these all combine together, and it's not that I'm saying that it's all inherently all good, because it's always, a system's always going to be comprised of people, and people are, you know, capable of both good and both bad. However, what I am saying is that I think it's a functioning system that we can appreciate and work with, because on the whole, I think it does take into realistic account human nature, and on the whole, there are self-governing aspects to it. So then, going back to this, it's that the growth and development of modern business has been connected with the freedom of thoughts and ideas, rights to property ownership, labor reform, the rule of law, and competition. And the result then, well, with the freedom of thoughts and ideas, innovation, right? You know, when we think of, you know, business today, you know, many businesses all around, you know, around us, certainly here in Canada and in North America, in many parts of the world, especially in as a result of Western capitalism, innovation has been a result. And just to give a few examples here. For a long time, the largest company by market cap, but also by, there are different metrics for one can use to define large, but this company is very large, and many of you have heard of it, General Electric. Well, General Electric, actually, its original founder was Thomas Edison, right, who brought to us many, many conveniences that we can appreciate, the light bulb and so on. And actually, similarly, it was also at the time Alexander Graham Bell. The reason why, you know, we have Bell Canada even, and the regional Bell operating companies, it's all named after its original founder, Alexander Graham Bell, who brought us the telephone. And over the years, I mean, Thomas Edison has been, you know, a great inspiration to many innovators, with the reminder that with every success, it has been the result of many other failures along the way. And that's a wonderful spirit to embrace, right? You know, to try, to work, to be industrious, to use our talents and our ability and our time and so on, you know, for the greater good. And so there's innovation, and, you know, many of us here use Apple, and, you know, there's innovation, right, you know? And not to say it's all good, but what I'm saying is that, you know, there has been good that has come out that we all are beneficiaries of. Innovation, investment in entrepreneurship. So touching on some of these companies, many companies that are large today originally started small. And that's entrepreneurship and how it works, right? And so when you look at companies like Apple or Microsoft, many started, especially in the technology field, but also in other areas, you know, in a garage, right, of a, you know, an engineer with an idea and a lot of hard work. I was just at Zara yesterday. You know, I think a number of us females here shop there, and you know, nice things, good prices. And the founder, you know, of Zara is a Spanish couple. They actually were initially seamstresses, and, you know, they started very, very simple, and certainly have expanded into what the, you know, this big company is that serves many people today. Also, with the rule of law, the upholding of business contracts, and this can't be taken for granted, because without contracts, without agreements, you know, it's basically enforcing an agreement, and without that, right, without enforcement, again, we as human beings, our nature can be to renege, right, or to dispute. And so it's with that also, you know, we're able to, you know, have functioning businesses and enterprises. Property rights as well, you know, has been, you know, a direct, I guess, you know, result from, you know, some of the great thinking that our forefathers in authority and government have thought about. And let me give you the example of something that's happened in Zimbabwe about 13 years ago. In 2000, Mugabe, the president, despot, whatever you want to call it, of Zimbabwe, decided, well, you know, it's inequality, you know, all the wealth is concentrated among the white farmers, and so we are going to just right this shit, because there are all these impoverished black people, you know, that are so much inferior, or who are so much less than the white farmers. So then they instituted this land reform, if they one might call that, where they basically confiscated land from the white farmers and transferred them to the black farmers, many of whom had just about no understanding of farming, and, you know, thinking, well, let's just, you know, equalize things. But the truth of the matter, what's happened is that farm food production in Zimbabwe, which is actually at one point viewed as a bit of a breadbasket in Africa, so a food producing nation, it declined 70%. 70%! And poverty has been exaggerated that much more in this country. So again, something that, you know, we have to be appreciative of, you know, where we are. Labor laws, and not to say that, you know, it's all, you know, a perfect system again, but I think things have evolved in a way that has been beneficial. And finally, in consumer protection and in choice. Of course, there's always the dark side to things, and I think it's important to address, because by no means am I saying that it's a perfect system. All I'm saying is that if we have a healthy view of business, the market, economy, then we can interact with it. We can take responsibility for our actions within it, rather than, you know, having this negative or critical view that can easily lead to inaction. But then, if it's with everything, you know, there are always going to be dark sides, simply because we're human beings functioning within the system. And what might this be? Well, at the very crux of, you know, when I think of malpractices, or when I think of, you know, business, or especially business that is in any way irresponsible or unjust towards those that interact with it. At the core of it, you know, the dark side, it's underpinned by selfishness and exploitation, taking advantage of others, especially the uninformed and the powerless, to our gain and to their detriment. It's a diabolic contrast to healthy stewardship. And before we point the fingers at others, it's important to understand that all of us are capable at times and guilty of, all of us are capable and guilty of at times exploitation individually or as part of an organization. And let's have a few examples here as well. You know, we're all here, either we might be employees, we might be employers, or a little bit of both. And, you know, exploitation can be something as small as, you know, being not putting in our best effort into our work, right? Because that is what we're paid for. And, you know, just basically, you know, sloppiness or irresponsibility. Well, in doing that, we're part of the exploitative, you know, side of things. But it can be much grander, right? You know, you've all heard of Bernie Madoff, for example, you know, this investor that was basically a fraud, and who built people you know, billions of dollars. And, well, he's sitting in jail now, so he's getting his you know, result of that. But, you know, there might be others. And so, you know, you've also had companies and, you know, perhaps those of us who are in leadership or who are part of the reporting process, accounting irregularities, you know, misrepresentation, that's all a form of exploitation. Or perhaps those of us who are in service and, you know, providing, you know, cutting corners, right? Or in a role where it's a production role and basically, you know, providing an inferior product, in, you know, knowing that we could have done something better, right? And so basically then it can happen at a high level and it can happen with us individually as well. And so then understanding that is very important, because then we interact with a healthy view, we interact actively, but know also that there are many, many temptations with ourselves and with others. And one of the main things I mentioned with the Bernie Madoff, for example, is, as you all know, he's serving time in jail. He'll be there for the rest of his life. Free markets then have a degree of self-regulation, especially on a longer-term basis. You get an individual like that, he got away for many years, but eventually was found out and penalized as a result. Also, competitive forces, you know, they punish the purveyors of faulty products, and you've seen that. You know, it may not even be all that faulty, but for example, Toyota, the car company, right, had a number of recalls, and they suffered sales declines for a few years as a result, and had to get their act back together. So there's a bit of a degree of self-regulation with the market system. Organized built-in falsehood eventually collapsed. I mentioned the Madoff, but also some of you here have heard of Enron in the past. And that was a classic case. So there is a degree of self-regulation that we can appreciate, but also ultimately justice is with God, and it's inherently limited here on this side of, you know, on earth. But as Christians, we know that we can ultimately look forward to God's perfect justice. So our responsibility as Christians is to balance between stewardship and trust in God, you know, right down to one of the key questions that were asked earlier. And if I were to condense it, I have two key points here. Number one, pursue wisdom and sensibility as consumers and as investors. Seek God's guidance in all money matters. For myself, especially knowing that I'm entrusted with assets of my clients to manage, I do actually ask God regularly for wisdom, for guidance, and I feel blessed that He has been faithful in guiding. So God really does guide us, and we can ask for it. He will show us. We seek to make informed decisions, and So seek God's guidance in all money matters. Make informed decisions. So to think carefully about the choices that we make, and ask around, read, right, and discern. The juxtaposition against that is to guard against impulse decisions. And also to guard against greed and exploitation. But the impulse decisions is an interesting one, because we have the human tendency to be impulsive, you know, to reactive. And I'm careful as I say this, but studies have shown, especially men, have been impulsive with decisions. it's studies based. And I think it pertains to all of us, but yeah, throw in a bit of humor here and there, right? Don't fall prey to exploitation by others and by corporations. And so, you know, when I mentioned earlier about, you know, the dark side, right, to the capitalist system, corporations, for example, who are competing for our attention, for our dollars, they advertise, they want to present their products, their services in a way that's attractive, and it may not necessarily be the best for us. And especially there's some forms of consumption which is addictive and even detrimental to health, tobacco, for example, but there are others, consumer-related. And I mentioned here other forms of exploitation that we can fall prey to by corporations. Exploitative loans. Some of you may have heard of payday loans and, you know, high-interest loans, you know, even credit cards and all that. It's a little bit tricky because, you know, the lures for companies to want us to become dependent and to basically subject us to exploitative terms. And then, as I've mentioned, you know, there are forms of advertising that can be deceitful, and to be watchful against that. And, you know, along with pursuing the wisdom and the sensibility is to develop healthy habits pertaining to money. And I say here that it's important to start with small, achievable steps. And this was actually really brought home to me, especially as I shared with some of the ladies at Servants Anonymous and, you know, some who have really never had even a bank account. They literally go paycheck to paycheck. And you know, I sit and really think, well, where do you start, you know? And I realized that with everything, you start with little steps, right? You know, you take little steps. And, you know, you save regularly and, you know, to build a habit of regular savings and investment, be it of money or, you know, all of the other areas that I've talked about, but the little steps always help. And especially pertaining to money specifically, to have those regular programs where every month, even if it's with one of the gals, I brought her, you know, to open an account up at the bank, and she started saving $25 a month for her daughter's education. And she was really proud of herself, and I was very proud of her. And for different ones of us here, it's different amounts, but what I'm saying is that it's never too early nor too small, right, to start to make a dent on things. And so save and invest with regularity, And also with that, I know I've had discussions with people. Some people have debts like credit card debts and student loans that they have yet to pay off and struggle with it. The same thing applies. Start small, but do it with regularity. And in time, the beauty of compounding is that it grows, right, with everything. You know, when you pay down your debts, your interest burdens shrink, you know, very quickly, more than you think over time. And conversely, if you're investing, be it in people, be it with your money, which eventually is for, you know, the blessing of people, there's a compounding effect as well. So then to close it off, this is a feedback from the master to the two servants to whom he had entrusted the 5 and the 2 talents. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. So with good stewardship, we feel the pleasure and the commendation of God. We get to share in greater participation in his kingdom work, you know, him putting us in charge of more things. And to come and share in our master's happiness is to share in God's joy. And what could be better blessing than that? So that's my part, and I will turn it back.
Thanks, Vinay.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for sharing with us. And there's a lot of stuff here, so do know that it's all recorded, if our recording's working, I'm hoping. And it's also available, all the notes are also going to be made available, if that's all right with you. We actually have put all our sermons online, so you can both listen to them and actually read along if you like, whichever works best for you. But I want to thank Vinay, because that was there's a lot of stuff that goes on in terms of investment. And the theory of investment, also the theology of investment. And it is a beautiful story that we read, especially from Matthew. Because in the end, the master is saying, come and share with me. That what we are doing, in fact, is that he invites us into partnership with himself. And which is an incredible way to understand how that works. But anyways, we're going to touch on some of these things. And if we have time, we'll see if you have any additional questions. If you have questions, I'm sure you can take Gunai for coffee or have a conversation with myself or Diana as well. But let's just go through these very quickly. What does the Bible say about investments and savings, considering God says do not worry about tomorrow? I think we've had a pretty good idea. It's the basic principles that are foundational of being responsible, the stewardship thing, is a fundamental about what we do, not only with money, but as Vinay had pointed out, with all the different aspects and facets of our lives, all the resources from experience to passions and so on and so forth. So that's really what the scriptures are talking about. And that all of these things, everything we have, everything that we actually are part of what we offer to God. Well, it's not a part, it is everything. We offer our very selves to God in worship. And it's simple to say. That's the principle. But in working it out from day to day, you and I know that we need accountability and conversation and resting with one another. Should we borrow to invest? Well, I think our comments on debt that Diana touched on, don't borrow more than you can pay back. Right? And I think part of what we're also speaking of is an aspect of discipline that Vinay had shared. And that is that, you know, even little increments pay these things back. I know credit cards can go up to like 20-odd%. So one of the disciplines of working with credit cards, if we're trying to not borrow ourselves into a problem, is to always pay it back, you know, on time and so on. But with this understanding that we don't have a strict control sometimes over our employment or income, we try to have it as you know, as budgeted and as open as possible. But you and I know things can happen. You know, jobs can be lost, and in certain areas of the world, we're in a very stable. You know, Canada is one of the best countries to live in because of our stability. You know, rule of law and all these other things. But if you're in other places in the world, things like war, things like economic corruption, those are part of the daily life and makes it very difficult to function in terms of investment. How do I focus on the good that comes from investing and prevent my trust and security from being based on those things rather than God? Well, I think there's two things. One of them is learning to trust God. To know that everything comes from Him. Everything comes from Him. When He entrusted those bags of gold or those talents, the thing with translation you have in your Bible, He gave those. We are born into our society, and that is our, that's what God invests in us. We're given our education, we're given our particular situations in life for a reason, and it is for the kingdom. And so when we can understand that everything comes from God, that's important to measure in parts of our stewardship. The other aspect is gratitude. It's to live in gratitude. And not, you know, can we talk about comparison and pride or envy or jealousy? Those things will begin to enter into if we are not able to every day be able, you know, as the adage goes, count your blessings. And what we have been very much entrusted and blessed with in our families and our own lives. Where is the line between investments and gambling on stocks? Well, it's actually under the aspect of where when I give this advice on or touches on the aspect of not being exploited and not working on impulse. All those things are important. And where the difference between investment and gambling fundamentally lie, from my understanding, is that there's due diligence when you're going to invest. Either you do it yourself, if you have the education to do it and the understanding of the markets, etc., or you entrust someone, right, like a mutual fund advisor or something like this, that you trust that there is really due diligence that's being done, that someone knows what they're doing. Whereas gambling, as you know, anyone would know, it's really not sure, pretty much boiled down to a roll of the dice or how you shuffle the cards. So there's no thoughtfulness. It's all impulse, you know, hit me, give me another card. It's, I don't know, I'm just crossing my fingers. So it's not an educated reality unless you're counting cards, and that's illegal too. So, I mean, those are the types of things we're looking at. So an educated understanding, a thoughtful engagement is what is a part of investing. Whereas gambling, a lot of times, is just completely based on chance. So these are some of the things we want to look at. And then the biblical teaching on investing, I think we've already touched on, so I won't get into it again. I do want to talk about gambling very quickly, and that is, how are we to view gambling? And there's a whole list of different things, and there's a little bit of different thing that goes on. One of the things that I talked about is there are different types of card games, from Go Fish match the cards, shell games, and then all the way up to poker, and whatever's popular, it's a seven card something, that is it these days, or whatever it is that we're playing. But here's the thing we view gambling. It is related to stewardship. Are we being good stewards of our money and of our time if we engage in certain types of gambling, whichever it may be a part of? This personal confession, and it is true, I know how to play poker. I don't necessarily play it well, but I know the principles, and I don't mind a good game of poker. I play poker with my friends, but here's the one place where I learned to draw the line, and that is, I never play for money. Oh, it's not so exciting without the, $5 or the 25 cents or the dime or the pennies. Of course not. That's why I play board games too. Because it's not, I don't play Yahtzee for money. I don't play Sorry for money. I don't play Monopoly for money. Okay? Although that sounds kind of funny because you're playing with fake money. But you don't play those things. You can have fun and know that these games are not ruled out. And yes, there's also aspects where there is a leeway. If you are able to have the discipline, to say, I'm going to spend, $5 here, $25, okay. I'm not going to quibble with that. But here's the real problem that I run into consistently, and all people in ministry, every pastor and every counselor runs into, is that we know people who have lost everything on gambling. And we mean everything. We don't mean necessarily the shirt off their back, although sometimes I'm sure that happens. We're talking about their entire families. And you might not know who you're playing poker with. And you might invite someone to, you know, play on the VLT that they're trying to put on the fairies these days. You get them to walk into there, and you say, hey, let's just spend a few bucks. And they make only one out of 100 of your friends who has this problem. But if you find the one, and he's not going to tell you, or she's not going to tell you, I have a problem with gambling, and you get them started, or you get them in, they may not have the discipline to say, you know what, I'm addicted to this, please don't bring me there. It's the same with any addiction. So the question is, are we being responsible in our communal life together as well? And part of the problem that we deal with in gambling these days is that our government is, I wouldn't use the word addicted, media likes to use that word, that they're addicted to gambling. The reality is a lot of revenues come from gambling for government. But I find that that becomes a bit of a problem because you're robbing one person to feed another. I don't know if that's necessarily a good idea. And this is why I'm not a big fan of that whole gambling understanding. So that's a personal understanding, but understand the principles underlying that. That as a community, you know, is it okay to watch one out of 100 families burn down? To lose everything? That's real gambling now. Gambling of lives. So this is where I stand with the gambling thing. Lottery tickets are interesting too, because, you know, there's a lot of charities that, you know, the whole lottery. I don't have a problem necessarily with those types of lotteries. But understand it plays on greed. The big house, the big cars, the millions of dollars. That's a little bit tricky. And here's one thing I learned really recently from a documentary and some market research. Some of the charities that actually run these, they actually, the highest returns they get from running the lottery is 30%. That means that they have $1 million kind of prize and they spread it out, some of the maximum that these people get back is only 30% of that amount. The rest they're spending on prizes, on marketing and everything else. And that's only if you do well. There is a good number of charities that lose money. And I don't know if you've read, but I think it was Burnaby?
Burnaby or Surrey
Hospital lost in the order of about $3 million trying to hold one of these, you know, get everyone in.
Royal Columbia.
Well, one of our local hospitals actually lost in the millions of dollars. What they did was they gambled. Gambling on gambling is really bad business. Right? That's what we're looking at as well in terms of their attempt to invest. So understand that gambling has addictive qualities to it. Understand some of the social impacts that it has. And be careful in terms of your engagement with it. Because if you become responsible for someone else's addiction or you play into it, then that becomes another, that's a communal responsibility. So is gambling really entertainment? I think it can be fun, but you can have fun in many different ways. Like I said, you know, play board games, right? Go have a fantastic meal, you know, somewhere. These are other ways. But understand that it is entertaining. There's no denying it can be fun. But just understand the ramifications of what you're dealing with. One of my stories about gambling is there's a little boy I was on the ferry once, this was way back before VLTs or anything else, and he wanted to play poker. I said, okay, let's play poker. And I said, okay, let's just play the game. So we played a couple, you know, hands and so on. And he said, hey, let's play for money. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I don't play for money. Oh, just a little bit. Have it just you know, maybe 25 cents. I said, no, I don't play for money. And he became very, you know, agitated because I wouldn't do it for money. But my question is, where did he learn this from? I can enjoy a wonderful game of poker with Neoplay chips or whatever else, but there's no interaction. One thing I learned, this is actually from watching television, but as never put yourself in a position where you can take advantage of your friends. That breaks all the fundamental rules that we talk about in terms of good relationship with other people. Good relationship with God's resources. So understand that there's a gulf of difference between investment, you know, and the market and how you interact with it, and gambling. Although there are similarities in regards to your thinking about engaging with society, with your community, in your relationship. And there is a dark side to all these things, but it can also be used for good. My hope is that all of us, one day, you know, when we stand before the Master, that we will hear those same words that, you know, that we put up at the end there. Well done, my good and faithful servant. Come and share in your Master's happiness. That is where we want to be. And my prayer is that we each hear those. Having only just touched on these, I'm just wondering, if you have questions, we'll have to deal with them another time. I'm sure you do, because I have a lot of questions still, like, you know. But let's move into a preparation for our communion.